Transform your life today. Welcome to Super Coach with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is instant confidence. And my guest is the author Paul McKenna, PhD, the most popular nonfiction author in the UK, whose television shows have been watched by millions of people in 42 countries around the world. He's worked with Hollywood movie stars, Olympic gold medalists, rock stars, business leaders, royalty, and my son. So, because Paul is actually also a very old friend. Paul, welcome to the show.
Well, it's very nice to be here. And unlike in the past where we've done it on the phone, I'm actually here with you in person.
I know, it's very exciting. So if you want to talk to Paul, get a bit of coaching on some how to get some instant confidence in your life, and we'll be talking about some of the ideas and techniques in his newest book, I Can Make You Confident, available at all good booksellers near you. The numbers to call, 866-254-1579. Toll free in the United States and Canada, that's 866-254-1579. Or if you want to talk to Paul from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 001-760-918-4300. And let's begin with sort of the obvious question, which is, what is confidence?
Well, you know, I suppose actually what I'd like to say is that I start by saying what it isn't. A lot of people think that it's being assertive, it's, you know, it's being able to push away through life, you know, being in people's faces. And I don't think it's that at all. I don't think it's that kind of arrogant, sort of assertive quality. I think it's about being comfortable in your own skin. In fact, I think those people, the arrogant ones, are actually very unconfident. So when you're confident, you're happy with who you are, you're comfortable in your own skin, you have a sense of ease, there's no desperation, there's a sort of relaxedness about you. And also, you have that motivation and optimism and vision to go for what you want. Indeed, the subtitle of this book is The Power to Go for Anything You Want.
So why is it then, because that makes it sound very natural, that makes it sound not like something put on or that you've got to particularly, you know, learn how to do. So why is it that we aren't all just naturally confident and comfortable in our own skin?
We see, I think we are born confident. And what happens is the civilizing process, you know, education, life experiences, you know, perhaps makes us doubt ourselves from time to time. In fact, the number one phobia in the Western world now is the fear of public speaking. And that is largely created by having to stand up in front of the class, read out loud, while somebody points out all your mistakes, you know, you feel uncomfortable, maybe the other kids laugh at you. So
you're bringing up some very difficult memories for me.
Yeah, maybe
I'll
I can help
okay,
you with that.
Man, I'll be okay.
So basically, our conditioning that happens, particularly in the first few years of life, gets us to doubt ourselves at times. And also the conditioning can get us to feel good about ourselves as well. So what I'm doing, I suppose, is helping people bring out their natural sense of self-worth and also reducing their worries and their doubts and showing them very simple strategies. I mean, you can read this book in like 2 or 3 hours, and it comes with a hypnosis CD. So you could then use simple strategies and begin to apply it. So people want confidence in all sorts of areas these days. They want it generally because we live in uncertain financial times. We live in also an age where there's uncertainty from things like global terrorism. So what's happened right now in the UK, where I have a number of books on the shelves, is that this book, the confidence book, has suddenly overtaken all of them, and that can be defined in many ways. But you know, to me, it's a sign of the times. But some people want confidence for specific things. They want to be able to be confident when they go out on a date. They want to be confident when they're at a party meeting people they don't know. They want to be confident on a job interview. They want to be confident, say, leaving a bad situation, maybe a bad marriage or a job that they don't want to do anymore. And so they sometimes need help in one area. You know, sometimes people are really, really confident in one area of their life and not in another. You know, I was working with a guy the other day who's running a multi-million pound corporation. But, you know, when it comes to giving a talk to people, he gets very nervous. But also, I would say this is very good for people who are already confident, but want to be even more confident. And a good example would be before he walked on the stage at the Super Bowl this year and sang to a billion people, Roger Daltrey, the singer from The Who, listened to the Confidence CD that comes with this book. Before he presented the Video Music Awards on television across the world, Russell Brand used the Confidence CD that comes with this book. Before she walked on the stage in the West End a while ago, you know, and won rave reviews, Daryl Hannah, the actress, used the techniques that are in this book. These are already very confident people, but what they want is that extra edge. And, you know, that's what this book and the Hypnosis CD show you how to get.
I still think that's so cool. You know what? I want to. There are so many people who want to get on and have a chance to talk to you. So I want to go straight to the phones. Let's start in New Jersey with Allison. Allison, welcome to the show. What's your question for Paul?
Hi. I'm not very confident at all. And, you know, I think that's kind of really hurting me.
Yeah.
I mean,
Allison, when. Yep. Yeah. Sorry, carry on. Yeah.
No, you go.
All right. So how do you know you're not confident?
I guess I just don't have faith in myself.
Yeah. And, okay, let's try a couple of thought experiments, shall we, for a moment. What would it be like if you did have more faith in yourself?
I guess I wouldn't have to worry so much.
Yeah. Now, you see, what I'm going to suggest is the worry is doing something for you. It's helping you. Because, you know, some people, they never worry about anything and they hit the edge in life. You know, they make mistakes. You know, they think they can do anything. And so, you know, whenever I've talked to somebody who's a high achiever, they'll tell me, yeah, I take risks, but they're educated, calculated risks. And when I talk to people who, procrastinators, you know, it's rarely because they're lazy. It's often because they're frightened and they're just too frightened. So your fear and your worry might be holding you back, but also is keeping you safe. Yeah. So what we don't want to do is just suddenly get rid of all the worry because it's actually helping you. Is this making sense?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. So let's do a couple of processes. Firstly, is there somebody that you can think of, you know, maybe a famous person, a sort of iconic character, maybe a movie star or, you know, somebody from history or somebody that maybe just somebody, you know, who is a very confident person or has more of the kind of confidence you'd like?
I guess my mother.
Your mother. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Your mother's a movie star. This is brilliant.
So, Allison, I'd like you to imagine your mother is standing in front of you right now. Mm-hmm. And I'd like you to imagine walking behind her and stepping into her body, like putting on a new suit of clothes, and see through your mother's eyes, hear through her ears, and feel how it feels. Can you get that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, what sort of internal dialogue does she have? Is she worrying and doubting, or is she sort of calmer in her internal dialogue?
She's calmer.
Calmer, yeah. And what's her body posture? Copy her body posture right now. You know, does she slouch? Does she cower? Or does she sit or stand upright?
Yeah, she stands straight.
Yeah, okay. All right, so stand as your mother stands, and that's it. And actually hear her internal voice. Where does she feel this confidence strongest in her body?
I guess, like, where her heart would be.
Yeah, okay. And if it had a color, what color would that be?
Pink.
It'd be, sorry, what color?
Pink.
Okay. I want you to take that pink, Allison, and spread it all the way around your shoulders, all the way up to the top of your head, all the way down through your chest, into your legs, down to the tip of your toes. Surround yourself in that pink now. How does that feel?
Feels pretty good.
It feels good, right?
Yeah.
And what I'd like you to do is imagine taking this pink into various areas of your life. So imagine waking up in the morning and feeling this pink feeling of confidence, taking this with you to work, taking it with you into social situations, taking it with you into any places where you think you need some more confidence.
Okay.
How's that feel?
It feels like it should work pretty good.
Yeah, so it's you see what we're doing? This is basically, it's one layer at a time. Now, you know the part of you that worries? Can I have a quick conversation with that for a minute?
Yeah.
Because you know what we do? We go, part of me wants to go to the cinema, but a part of me wants to stay at home. And it's not as though there are two different people inside us. These are aspects of our psyche, of ourself. So can I just ask that part of you that worries, can I ask it a favor? Would it talk to me for a minute?
Yeah.
okay, I'd like it to continue to do all the good things that it does for you, but without you having to worry so much in future, because it sounds like the worry part is actually getting you a bit stressed out. And, you know, sure, we want it to think through problems that could happen so that they don't occur, but we don't want it to overdo its job. You know, it's a bit like, there's a saying by Mark Twain. It was, I've been through some terrible experiences in my life, and some of them actually happened. And so what I don't want your worry to do is overdo its job. So could it still do its job, but without worrying you so much?
I think so.
Yeah? And would it do that as an experiment for the next few days and integrate it into your thinking and behavior?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. These are a couple of techniques that are in the book and on the CD that help you. And, you know, and how do you feel right now, by the way?
Pretty good.
Okay. Allison, thank you so much for calling and for, you know, taking part in these thought experiments. And, you know, I hope that that you find over the next few days that you've got more faith in yourself and you feel better and better.
Well, thank you so much for taking my call.
Thank you, Allison.
God bless.
Do you know, I remember, Paul, one of the first times I ever did the sort of confidence step in that you know, you describe in the book. And I was teaching a group, and there was this woman probably in her 70s in the front row, and she raised her hand very tentatively. You know, I was, you know, I'm waiting for the person to go, I lack confidence. But, you know, she raised her hand very tentatively and said, could I step into Arnold Schwarzenegger? And all of a sudden, this little meek woman is walking around the room like, hi there. It's quite remarkable what can actually be done when you just step outside, I think, that limiting idea of, yeah. Well, this is who I am, and I'm just the kind of person who.
Well, and I think, you know, this is one of the things that we have as human beings that's great, is this ability to mock things up in our mind and try them out first, you know. And that's, Einstein used to call them thought experiments. And, you know, and I like that, you know, that because confidence isn't an accident that sort of randomly happens to some people and not others. Confidence is created through certain ways of thinking and certain ways of acting in the world. And, you know, this book is full of very simple strategies that will work for most people most of the time.
All right. Well, let's go from New Jersey down to Tennessee, and let's talk to Joan in Nashville. Joan, welcome to the show. What's your question for Paul?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I really don't have a specific question. I'm just at kind of a crossing over place in my life. I have 18 months of recovery from prescription drugs, and they tended to give me confidence. And now that I don't have them, I'm experimenting with I'm getting more confident, but I find myself just terrified at times.
Okay.
Just terrified.
All right, Joan. Well, firstly, I love your accent, by the way.
thanks.
So, may I, can I talk to the terror, to the fear? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's easy.
Okay, so if you could imagine that on your left hand, if you could put your hands out in front of you, palms up, and on your left hand, could you place the terror and the fear.
Uh-huh.
And I want to talk to the terror and the fear, because it sounds like what you were describing, the use of prescription drugs to control the fear, is a very common thing these days. In fact, our culture is set up around controlling our feelings, you know, drinking, drug-taking, right. Gambling, sex, shopping, television, food, all these things change how we feel. And, you know, I think in some cases, prescription drugs really, you know, can help people with anxiety and things like that, you know, and that's really a decision from medical doctor. But what I'd like to do is given that the terror and the fear, which was pushed away, squashed down, if you like, disowned for a long right. time because of the use of the prescription drugs, I want to talk to the disowned part of the fear. Can I talk to that?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, and how does it feel to be disowned, fear?
Lonely.
Yeah.
Lonely and sad.
Lonely and sad. And that lonely and sadness was saying, hey, look, I feel lonely and sad, and was shouting louder and louder, and then being pushed down even more and more with the prescription drugs. And so basically, the more you push a feeling away, the louder it'll shout. And in the end, the original thing that it was shouting about probably wasn't that big a deal. But because it wasn't getting heard, it had to up its level of noise, its signal, you know. So is there anything that the sadness, the loneliness, and the fear wants you to know right now?
The loneliness.
Just get in touch.
I'm blank.
Sorry, it says what?
I'm blank.
You're blank. Okay, yeah. Okay, here we go. No, don't worry. Just tune into the fear for a minute again. Can you get back in touch with it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. And what's the fear want you to know? Is there anything to be frightened of, or is it just want you to know that it's there in case it needs to alert you to any danger? Or what's its function? What's it doing for you?
It's a survival thing about making sure that I have a place to live and money and safety, physical safety.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, and you know what? I think that's a very good thing, that we should all be concerned about our safety, money, about a place to live and survival, yeah? But the thing is that it's kind of ironic, really. Sometimes when we worry too much about that, or we get too frightened about it, it can actually affect our quality of life, you know, which is the very thing we're trying to preserve.
Right.
So I'd like to say to the fear, can it continue to do its job without having to shout so loud?
Yes, I think so.
Okay. And any disowned aspects of the fear, can you say, it's all right, come on back in, you don't need to worry, you don't need to feel lonely, you don't need to feel sad.
Okay.
Now, what I'd like you to do is, on your right hand, I want you to put the antithesis of fear, which is peace, calm, emotional equilibrium. That's it. You know that peaceful, lovely, calm feeling that everything's okay, all is well. And can you place that on your right hand like that?
Yes.
And now, how does that feel, the peaceful, calm feeling?
It feels good.
Feels good. Now, what I'd like you to do is to rise above the two of them and go to a place above them and let them both coexist at the same time.
Okay.
How's that feel?
It feels good, and I'm able to do that in life a lot of times. It's just kind of in between things when I'm not in that. It feels that spiritual place that
yes.
I go to.
Great. Now, just hold that spiritual place for a moment. Would it be okay, and I'm talking to all parts of you right now, if you, in future, could have the emotional signals that you need without them being overwhelming, unless there was a real emergency? I mean, if the house is on fire, have a big signal of fear. But, you know, if it's just that there's a little concern about something, it doesn't need to freak you out so much. Because what I'd like your emotions to do is to recalibrate. Following this period of them being dampened down through the medication, I'd like them to recalibrate so they don't need to over-signal to you now. Would that be okay?
That would be wonderful.
They agree to do that?
Yes.
Great. How do you feel right now?
I feel better.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Joan. God bless
you. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you. God bless you.
So now we're talking, by the way, to Paul McKenna, PhD. He's when I say best-selling author, I'm really doing him a disservice because he's sort of reset the bar for what best-selling means. Particularly in the UK, and now as more of his books are coming over here to the United States, his new one, which we're talking about, it's called I Can Make You Confident, The Power to Go for Anything You Want. Paul, one of the things that I've noticed in both of the calls that we've had so far today is this notion of where people almost want to reject the bad feelings, and what you seem to be doing is bringing them in and embracing them.
Yes, I mean, this actually is, you know, I think it's a fundamental idea, really, in psychology, which is that, you know, what we push away or reject, you know, our sort of shadow self, if you like, comes back and shouts even louder. And I think that, you know, this is something I've been working with recently, and it's from the work of a friend of ours, Genpo Roshi, the creator of Big Mind. And he's about, you know, embracing all aspects of the disowned self. And I really quite like the idea of that a human being, you know, is an integrated system. If you change one bit, it changes the whole thing. And so, you know, if there's a part of us that we're rejecting and denying, disowning, then, you know, it may throw the whole thing out of whack. And so, you know, as I said to Joan, that's the way the world is kind of set up, you know, for us to change our feelings by external means. And what I was doing is just recalibrating, resetting, and letting all those aspects of her feel heard. And so there's more equilibrium in the system.
Well, and I think it's something interesting about that place that she got to, which allowed for both the really wonderful calm feelings and the really kind of horrible fear feelings,
yeah,
was what you would call a spiritual place.
Yes, I know. I like that she used that word, actually. And, you know, because I think of it much more mechanically. You know, I consider myself, I suppose, a psychological mechanic. I'm a spiritual person, you know, but I don't...
bringing love to the soulless psychobabble of Dr. Paul McKenna. Michael Neal will be right now. Okay.
Exactly.
So actually, let's go to Jerusalem in Israel, and let's speak to Zelek. Zelek, welcome to the show. What's your question for Paul?
Hi there, Michael, and hi there, Paul. First of all, I've read both of your books, love them. I've been into NLP since 1982 when I read Frongs into Princes, and I collect states. I wrote an article in Anchor Point called One Collecting States. And my question is like this. I feel the awesome information that you have about collecting states, and Michael, you did a wonderful job editing the book. It's really necessary for first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, and all the way up. So the question is, what can be done to get every single teacher to know this material? Because every single student's going to get better marks in every single test if they have this extreme instant confidence.
Yeah,
so the question is, what can we do to get this into the schools by having teachers make mandatory reading?
Well, you know, I'm so glad you said that. And I was saying this in an interview a while ago, saying that at school we learn math and English and history, but wouldn't it be great if there were classes in confidence? You know, and some people laughed when I said it. And I said, yeah, I understand it sounds a bit wacky, but, you know, it's one of those things that we're just supposed to pick up along the way. And now there are, you know, books like this, which is a sort of formal manual. You know, I don't think there were years ago. I mean, there were things like Dale Carnegie's book, you know, How to Win Friends and Influence People. But, you know, in recent years, we've seen a lot more books on this kind of subject because of the, you know, the sort of exponential development of the sort of self-help book industry. And, you know, this is a great question. How do we get these techniques, ideas?
It's an approach. It's an approach more than just a technique.
Yes,
it's an attitude,
it is.
Approach, and
it
a
is.
Technique.
You're right. It is. It's an approach. It's a mindset. It's a discipline. You know, it's more
and it's
than
easy.
Just
easy. It is so easy once you know how to do it. I give a workshop for 3-year-olds. Almost have a joke. It's a niece of mine has a little play group, and I walk in there and say, "We're going to learn one word today: joy." And I go, "Joy, joy, joy." And I always say that if your teachers would do that with the ABCs, would do that with arithmetic, everybody's going to be joyful all day because test is stupid to get people with the wrong answers. You want everybody to learn all the material.
That's
and
right.
A joyful attitude. And it's easy.
Well, you know, you are preaching to the converted with this one. I mean, Craig, I wish I was a 3-year-old in your class. I know I'd be well and truly uplifted by your lovely, positive energy.
I was going to say, I sort of remember that exercise, except I think in my school it was shame, shame,
yeah.
Shame.
Do you both know Lionel Ketchin, who started the first Happiness Club 10 years ago in Fairfield, Connecticut?
I don't know.
No.
Okay. I want to also present to both of you. You can look at his website, happinessclub.com. He's been happy for the last 20 years. He made a decision 20 years ago, Lionel, to be happy, and ever since then, he has been happy. And I met him a number of times. I've written a number of books. I wrote a book on happiness, wrote a book on courage, and he is amazing. So I would recommend to both of you get in contact with him because having coaches that you're both expert in, teaching happiness clubs, I feel that this can go, especially Michael, you wrote already a book on happiness, very good book.
Well, and Paul actually has a wonderful new book on happiness, which will be coming out, is it in January?
It is, yeah. I hear you. I think the way to get this out there is to be a living example of it and just talk to as many. You know, Gandhi said, be the change you want to see in the world. And
right.
and to get out there with, you know, and let the word spread. I mean, there's so often a book with, you know, not very much budget behind it or not very much, you know, a really good idea, you know, will just break through. I just watched this fantastic movie, The Social Network, which is about the creation of Facebook. And, you know, this started very small and word spread. It was a word of mouth thing. And now, of course, it's a global phenomenon. Facebook's, you know, up there with Coca-Cola and Exxon. You know, I mean, it's changed the world. And I think, you know, the same can happen with a good idea. You know, it'll get out and it'll change the world.
So, Zelik, we're coming up on the break. Thank you very much for phoning in.
And I talking to both of you, and it's a big pleasure to talk.
Brilliant. And do you know, it seems to me that actually Zelik was a great example of just being the change, you know, just the joy and exuberance in what he had to do. We're coming up on a break. If you'd like to get in and speak with Paul, ask him a question, get some coaching on confidence. Instant confidence in your life. Numbers to call 866-254-1579. It's toll-free in the United States and Canada. Sue and Maggie, you are next in the queue. If you want to reach the show from outside the United States, like, say, our last caller from Jerusalem, you can do that on 760-918-4300. And we will be back with more thoughts on confidence and more of Paul McKenna right after this break.
Real strategies for real change. This is Supercoach with Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking with Paul McKenna, PhD, author of the new book, I Can Make You Confident. And we're talking about how to have instant confidence in your own life. And we're going to go straight back to the phones. And we're going to go to Michigan now, from Jerusalem to Michigan. And let's speak with Sue. So, Sue, welcome to the show. What's your question for Paul?
Hi, Michael. Hi, Paul.
Hi, Sue.
Hi. I just recently purchased your book, I Can Make You Thin.
Oh, yes.
So I'm really looking forward to working with that. So I was really excited to hear you were on the show today.
Thank you.
Sure. And I had quit smoking about a year ago, and I had put on a lot of weight.
Yes. Well, do you know, a lot of people do. In fact, actually, I have a book coming out in the U.S. called Quit Smoking Today Without Gaining Weight.
Oh, I wish I would have had that back when I quit smoking.
Yeah. Well, you know, I know. People have told me that. The good thing is you got the thin book now, so that'll readjust it. You know, the thing is, because people control their feelings with cigarettes, I mean, cigarettes are a very efficient stress control mechanism, but just with a massive negative long-term health consequence. But when people quit smoking, what happens is they, you know, they go control their feelings sometimes by other means, and it might be drinking or it might be overeating. And in fact, there's a huge proportion of people gain weight when they quit smoking. Although using my system, 97% of people gain no weight whatsoever. And this is, I think, down to what I'm addressing is the core issue with smoking, which is stress control. So I get people to give up and feel relaxed at the same time. And, you know, hardly anyone gains any weight. So I'm pretty proud of this system. And it'll be available here in the U.S. in January this year.
Yeah, that's awesome. Because I think a lot of the reason why people, or they use it as an excuse to quit smoking, well, I know I'll gain weight.
Yes, that's right. So, and also the cigarette companies are very happy to let you know that as well.
Yes. Anyways, my quick question is, sometimes I notice when I go on job interviews and things like that, I feel almost like my confidence kind of goes out the window. Like I just get real nervous, like I, you know, kind of anxiety type of a feeling. And I just want to have more instant confidence.
Okay. Well, look, there's two things I can show you. Firstly, when you're talking to your friends, you know, and you're not worried about being judged, you probably have more confidence, right?
Yeah.
So just imagine right now, if you close your eyes and imagine that you're talking to your friends, and notice where that confident, happy, sort of nice feeling is in your body. Is it in your heart? Is it in your tummy? Is it in your head? You know, just notice, where is that?
I'd say it's more in the middle, kind of like by my heart or in the middle.
And I'd like you to squeeze your thumb and middle finger together on your right hand. There we go. That's it. Good. And now what I'd like you to do is to go through that memory of talking with your friends like three or four times. See what you saw, hear what you heard, and feel how good you felt. Make the colors richer and brighter and bolder. Make the sounds louder and the feeling stronger. And as you keep going through that memory and squeezing your thumb and middle finger together, what you're doing is you're creating an associational link. thing between the good feeling and the squeeze of your thumb and fingers. So when you've done this several times, you only have to squeeze your thumb and finger together, and suddenly, bam, the good feeling comes back. Now, let's do this thing next. What I'd like you to do, and this is actually one of Michael's techniques, I love this, is what I'd like you to do is, you remember that show The Brady Bunch, where they had like 9 screens in front of you, yeah?
Yeah.
I'd like you to imagine 9 screens and put images on 8 of them. And what I want you to do is put 9 images of different, like, times you felt loved and supported by life, or people that, you know, you really like spending time with, or times you felt good about yourself. Maybe you won an award, or maybe you you just did something you felt particularly creative about, you know, or maybe it was just spending time with fun people. But, you know, things that remind you that you're loved and supported, and, you know, and things that make you feel good. And when you've got 8 of those screens filled with different things, you know, people's faces or times you felt good, just tell me, yeah.
Okay.
Okay, now, when you look at that, it feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What I'd like you to do on the screen that hasn't got an image on it yet is put you at a job interview. And, you know, see what you'll see and hear what you'll hear. Like, so it's a sort of point of view camera, if you like. And you're walking into the job interview, you're talking to people. Squeeze your thumb and finger together. But surrounded around you are images that remind you how loved and appreciated you are and feel good about yourself.
Okay.
And when you think about going to the job interview like that, it feels different, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. So these are the kind of things that when you practice it over and over again, make a difference to how you feel and then ultimately how you then perform in the job interview. Because what a lot of people do is they imagine everything, you think, what if they ask me about this? What if they ask me about that?
Yes, that's what I have a tendency to do, yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is that, you know, you can't think through everything they're going to ask you. So it's better just to, you know what it's like when you're in a resourceful state, you're able to find the answers. But when you're in a frightened state of mind, you know, there's a greater tendency to freeze up or to come across as, you know, nervous or, you know, perhaps not sure of yourself. And nobody wants that, you know, although at the same time, everyone expects you to be just a little bit nervous at a job interview because, you know, that's what being human's about. How do you feel about going to a job interview right now? Is there any difference?
Yeah, actually, a little calmer, definitely.
Great. So look, if you use the book that you've already bought, it comes with a hypnosis CD, and that'll put you into a deeply, profoundly relaxed state of mind and body. And when you're in that, you know, think about things that normally stress you out. And what happens is the relaxation from the hypnosis will then carry into these other areas of your life.
Oh, wow. Excellent.
And I think there's something kind of fun about knowing that the same thing you're listening to was listened by Roger Daltrey before he went out to sing to a billion people. Yeah. And it's like, all I've got is a job interview? Are you kidding? I think I'm going to be okay.
Yes, that's so true. Definitely.
All right. Thank you so much, Sue.
God bless.
Thank you. And I love both your guys' books. They're awesome.
Thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Okay. Bye. God bless.
You know, there is one thing you said there that I just think is so important is that people get this idea that confidence is an absolute and that you mustn't feel any nerves ever. And that if you do, that somehow means you're not a confident person.
Yeah.
And I think there's something really useful in just knowing, look, nervous happens.
Yeah.
It's just when it's getting in the way of you doing what you really want to do. Mm. Being your best self and getting where you want to go, that's when it's a problem.
Well, I think also one of the great gifts you can give somebody else is where you are authentically. You know, if you can say, you know, I know we're going out on this date, or I know I'm about to give this speech. I'm, you know, when you say I'm a bit nervous, but, you know, I really need to say this, you know, suddenly you've got my attention, you know? And I think that's one of the things that, as you say, people think the confidence means no fear at all. Well, you know, actually when you do something, but you're a bit frightened, but you do it anyway, that's called courage. And I think that's a very admirable quality.
Let's go back to the fun side. We're going to stay in Michigan. We're going to go to Maggie. Maggie, is it Maggie or Maggie?
Maggie.
Maggie. Okay. I thought that must be a typo. So Maggie, welcome to the show. What's your question for Paul?
Well, I feel confident most of the time, but like you were saying, sometimes those thoughts kind of creep up. Is there a technique that you can use to kind of get through that without spinning it bigger?
Okay.
What happens sometimes?
Well, okay. I mean, look, there's a couple of things we can do. Firstly, you know those thoughts that come up? You can hear them in your head right now, can't you?
Mm-hmm. Kind of like, who do you think you are?
Exactly. Now, is it at the front of your head, the back, or the sides? Where's the voice?
Kind of over on the left.
Okay. Yeah. Now, what I'd like you to do is to float those thoughts. Let's just do one at a time. So who do you think you are? I want you to float that about 10, 12 feet away from you, yeah?
Okay.
And then what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to hear it. So you're hearing it 10 or 12 feet away, like a tape loop going around. Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? And I want you to actually change the tone of it. So it goes, who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Who do you think you are? Yeah. See, you can't take it seriously like that. And so if you're going to, say these things to yourself again and again, which are really like bad hypnotic suggestions,
exactly.
You might as well, make them ridiculous. So float now, Maggie, float all of those thoughts out. That's it. Float them all out of your head. And so they're over there floating in space about 10, 12 feet away, all just chattering away, and then realize they're just thoughts. They're just thoughts.
Yeah.
They're just thoughts, and let them dissolve. Dissolve into the ether. There you go. And as they dissolve, how do you feel now?
I feel better.
Yes.
I feel more in control.
Yes, that's
sort
great.
Sort of like the other thing was sort of like I stepped on a train and I was going off on a runaway train, and now I feel like I have the ability to just step back off.
Yeah, I mean, it was a good example of your brain running you rather than you running your brain. And look, we all get it from time to time. There isn't anyone on the planet who doesn't at some stage have some self-doubt or, their mind doesn't overdo its job,
Sure.
And, it probably, stems back to somebody once said to you, who do you think you are? That sort of thing. I know I've had it said to me many times.
I think I've said it to you.
Teachers, yeah.
So, Maggie, I really appreciate your call today because I think what you said, a lot of people resonate with. And, we all get those thoughts from time to time. And, we need a voice that does check in with us and say, hey, this is a good idea. I'm not sure we should be doing that. And I think it's okay to have a critical internal dialogue, but it needs to be constructive criticism. Because if you were going to encourage a child, you wouldn't say, who do you think you are? You'd say, hey, maybe don't do it like this. Try it like that. So it would have a sort of an encouraging tone. So if you just, monitor those thoughts over the next few days, and if it gets out of hand, voice, just pull it out, stick it 10, 12 feet away and make it sound ridiculous. And then, put something in, say, what's the message of that internal voice? What's it trying to tell me? Okay. And ask it to speak to you in a kind and nicer way. Notice what happens.
Give better criticism.
Yeah. That's more all I'm going to ask your internal dialogue to do. Yeah. Thanks so much.
Thank you,
Maggie.
God bless. Bye-bye.
You have a great day.
And you.
So there's something that I think is just so fun in that. I remember for me, it was an absolute shock when I realized that the voice inside my head wasn't me. I had just assumed that, it sounded like me. It was coming from inside my head, so it must be me. And the first time I sort of started to hear it like that, and I think my first silly voice was, who do you think you are? But it was just this extraordinary sensation of freedom.
Yes, I mean, I know. It's really amazing, isn't it? I felt exactly the same. Just because there's a voice inside your head doesn't mean you have to listen to it, And I remember reading a quote once. Somebody said, the voice inside your head is not God. It just thinks it is. And actually the making it, just taking it out, disassociating it, for a lot of people, that's enough. But then making it ridiculous. In fact, I actually met somebody once who kind of spoke like that. That's where I got it from, because I had to leave the room because I thought I can't. And then I tried out all sorts of different tonalities on people. I would try Mickey Mouse work for some people, but then that is the sort of universal voice of ridiculousness.
So with the universal voice of ridiculousness, let us go to San Diego and talk to Tanya.
Tanya, welcome to the show. If you're still with us, if we haven't put you off, what's your question for Paul today?
Hello.
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 Hi, thank you for taking my call. I wish I had a crystal ball to help me decide, make a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And because, I feel pretty much like a flip-flopper
mm-hmm.
because of that, and that creates a lot of insecurities in me. I don't know if it's because I have my ascendant in Gemini that makes me this way, but I am trying to make some life decisions, because I'm not a spring chicken anymore. I'm 46.
So am I.
Well.
Oh, great, great. Destroy the confidence of my guest. Thank you very much, Tanya. Do you know how hard it is to run a radio show without people like you calling in and making my guests feel inadequate?
I feel a lot older now, suddenly. I think 46 is young. I mean, it used to be old, but now with all the sort of medical developments, yeah, we're all going to live to be older. Tanya, sorry, can I just jump in for a second here? So you've got a decision to make right now, yeah? And you can't decide which way to go with it, yeah? You say you were flip-flopping, yeah? Was that right?
It's with my career choices, you know?
Yes.
What I don't want to happen is that 35 years from now, regret going either direction, you know? So I don't know.
Yeah. Okay, hang on one sec. So you've got, if you've got two choices in front of you, two different paths?
Yeah, yes.
Or do you have more than that?
Maybe around three, you know. I used to be a commercial pilot, and I don't know whether I should go back and the output would be okay. Should I just pursue being a social worker? I mean, I'm just confused.
Okay, brilliant. All right. But not brilliant that you're confused. Brilliant when we know where we are. Now, a lot of people, what they do is they don't upside and downside before they do a decision, or they try and think of it all at once and get confused. Now, a simple decision might be, should I ask that girl over there out on a date because I like her? Now, if I upside and downside that, the downside is she might reject me and I might feel bad for half an hour or so, or maybe less. The upside is she might say yes, you know, we might have a wonderful relationship, blah, blah, blah. So the upside outweighs the downside. Now, we could upside and downside all your different decisions, but there's a quicker way to do this. What I'd like you to do is to imagine there's three different paths you've got. I want you to just imagine vividly that what it would be like to go down path number one, you know, and imagine sort of a year into that, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, etc. Just get a snapshot of that, Tanya, yeah, of path number one, and tell me when you've done that.
Done.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. Now, a notice where how your energy is. You know, does that feel like a good thing? Does it feel like a neutral thing or a bad thing? Then I'd like you to go down path number two, and imagine a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. You know, into that, what that's going to be like. You know, and just get a sort of ballpark on the energy and the feeling around it.
Okay.
Okay. Great. Then go down path number three. And get a ballpark on the energy and the feeling around that.
Okay, done.
Now, what I'd like you to do is just, where was the energy best? One, two, or three?
I just felt on number one, like a deep thing in my heart, like a deep desire in my heart.
All right. Now, look, that's the basic template because, you know, you could spend more time doing this in detail over the next day or two. But at the moment, number one comes out in the lead. See, do you see what I mean? So I'm not saying you should definitely go do number one, but this is a way to begin to distill something because, you know, nobody wants to make a mistake. And, you know, that part of you that's going, hey, we don't want to be 35 years down the road and think we made the wrong choice. But at the same, you know, because we'll be disappointed. But imagine how disappointed you'll be if you don't reach any decision.
Yeah.
Yep. So what does it feel like if you think about doing number one?
My heart just wants to do it despite of me putting in my head saying, you know, it might not work, this and that, but it's just the heart says, go and do it.
Okay. Well, I think you got your answer. I'd think about it a bit more over the next few days, but I think you have your answer there.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, basically what has happened to me is that I have gotten stuck, meaning not doing anything.
Yes, that's right. Well, do you know, we were saying this earlier. I've known lots of people who procrastinate, and it's not because they're lazy. It's because they're scared of making the wrong decision or things not working out. And, you know, we can't always predict everything that's going to happen. And life does involve some risk, but it's better if we reduce that by making it educated, calculated risk. And even if there is a bit of risk, I think if you follow your heart, that's a reward in itself. And even if things don't turn out exactly the way you want it, the fact that you followed your heart is worth everything.
Okay, that's a good one. So going to a psychic wouldn't help, is that right?
No, I mean, I know some good psychics, and what a psychic can do is tell you, as far as I see anyway, is can tell you their, you know, psychic sense, their prediction around a certain sort of area in your life. And, you know, and I think that, you know, for example, there's a friend of mine who's a psychic called Anne Jersch. And, you know, if I have, say, a big business decision upcoming, I'll say, what's your psychic feeling about this? And she'll say, well, you know, this feels like that might have this outcome. This feels like it might have that outcome. And this feels like it might have that outcome. And, you know, I take that into consideration. I've got managers, agents, lawyers, accountants. Why not a psychic as well? You know, and of course, the thing is that not all psychics are the same. You know, just like, you know, there are good and bad mechanics, good and bad cars, good and bad accountants. There are good and bad psychics. So, you know, I think ultimately the decision has got to be yours. But sometimes a psychic can throw in some extra insight into a situation.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you so much.
Tanya.
God bless, Tanya.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You know, I'll go back to the funds in a minute, but I think there's a big thing there, which is just the difference between where you're trying to make a decision from. That if you're trying to make a decision from your head, I always, to me, it seems like you're using an abacus and you're like moving one beat to the right because, well, it might work out this way. And then you move two beats to the left because that might happen. And one beat where you've got this amazing computer that speaks to you through your own energy.
Yes.
And that, you know, when your energy goes up, it's like there is a really clear signal there. It's like the output on the computer. It's done the calculation.
Yeah.
And whether or not it gets you exactly the result that you want, the experience of that is going to be something actually that you'll be really glad you did rather than something that you regret.
I think it's a really nice way of putting it. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
Let's go. I think we got time for one last call. Let's go to Missouri and talk to Ryan. Ryan, welcome to the show. What's your question for Paul?
How's it going?
This is a
really interesting question, and I probably, when I was calling, I didn't think I would be asking this, but I'll go ahead and ask it.
Sure.
How do you keep from being a jerk?
The wrong two guys, but we're going to do our best.
Do you know, actually, I'm glad you asked that because when I was writing this book, everyone went, oh, great, you know, a training manual for jerks, that kind of thing. And and I think what's happened is certain people from the sort of motivational community, if you like, go on these sort of rah-rah seminars. And I'm all for that, by the way. But they learn a bunch of assertiveness techniques. And, you know, some people undoubtedly can benefit from being able to put their point forward rather than, you know, be a wallflower. But there is you're absolutely right. There's a great difference between being a jerk and, you know, being too assertive and arrogant and cocky and sort of in people's faces and actually being confident. And I think deep within you, you know the difference. And if you don't, the way to do it is to take in feedback. And, you know, one of the simple things that you can do is to just go and ask people, you know, or I like Gandhi's thing, which is stepping into other people, you know, so step into other people and see yourself through their eyes. And, you know, I do this every now and again. Do you want to try this now? I mean, think about somebody who loves and respects you. Just imagine they're standing in front of you now. Float into them and look at yourself through their eyes. And notice all the things about you that they love and respect. Maybe some of the things you hadn't even really thought about until now. And also maybe, you know, notice some of the things that you might want to take on board as feedback. You know, some of the things you might want to change, you know.
Okay.
Just, yeah, did you get any insights?
And that's really the preface for my call was that I got a quote from Michael on one of his emails, and it says that no man can be your guru because your own guidance is the way to go. And so I don't know if I'm taking that too far. And when somebody is being just wasting my time, at least from my point of view, I just don't have any time for them, but I don't want to be a jerk about it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and I think that comes down to, you know, how you communicate. I mean, you know, some people can take offense to anything. So, you know.
Yeah, I find that if you leave out the words, you idiot, at the end of your sentence, that pretty much takes care of a lot of it.
Thank you for the question, actually. It was a very relevant one that comes up a bit, you know, and so it's nice to be able to answer that. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Ryan.
Okay, God bless.
So we're coming to the end of the show, Paul. And I want to be sure to tell people. So the new book in America is I Can Make You Confident.
Yes,
you can still
it
get it in the United Kingdom in, as Instant Confidence. But yes. Now there's also an iPhone app.
There is indeed. I took a lot of the techniques that are in this book, and I made little video techniques of it. So say you need, you know, confidence for going to a job interview, you're going on a date, or you just need confidence for public speaking or something like that, or even in your generally in your everyday life, you just, you know, you download the app, you hit a button, and I pop out, and I give you like a 5-minute visualization technique, or, you know, I talk you through it, or I get you to, you know, think through things in your mind so that you feel better. So you've got me on tap 24 hours a day.
So you can do that. You can go to the App Store at iTunes and just type in Instant Confidence or Paul McKenna.
Yes, indeed.
So thank you so much.
Hey, it's thank you.
Absolute pleasure, as always.
Yeah, likewise. And it's so nice to be here with you in person doing this. I mean, this was fantastic fun today.
Very cool. So we will be back with a brand new show next week. There'll be some rebroadcasts of this one. And of course, you can always listen to the shows in the archives at hayhouseradio.com. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.